From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is a special edition of Insight. I'm Randall White. Today we're talking about the past, present, and future of LGBTQ rights. Civil rights for those who identify as LGBTQ have evolved significantly since members of that community stood up to police raids at New York's Stonewall Inn back in 1969. Sacramento's George Raya was a central figure during several equality milestones in California, including one dating back to 1970 on the Sac State campus that changed the landscape for student clubs statewide. He was also instrumental in getting the state to decriminalize same-sex relationships. George Raya joined us to share memories from his front row seat over the past five decades. He started by telling us about his first meeting with the Society for Homosexual Freedom at Sacramento State.
When we had our first organizational meeting, which was at a professor's home, every time there was a knock on their door, we froze because we didn't know if it was the police coming or if it was another person coming to attend the meeting.
Because at that point, it was illegal.
Oh, yeah. Unapprehended felons, mm-hmm. You know.
So 2019, the 50th anniversary of the Stonewall riots, yeah. Also marks the 50th anniversary of your coming out. Did Stonewall play a role in that?
No. It was during my freshman year, and I knew I was gay back, like, seventh grade, but never did anything about it. And then college, you experiment, and so that's when I came out. I was the fourth person in my family to come out, so it was easier for me, and I had kind of role models in the family, two lesbians and a drag queen cousin.
It seems like it was easy, especially given the time frame. When you see how easy it is for children to come out today, not for all kids, but for a growing number of young adults, do you look and just think, wow, you live in a different world?
It helped give me the stability and foundation to be an activist because I didn't have to worry about family.
Yeah, and you quickly became an activist. Yeah. It was a book that you read that sent you down that path.
A Law Review article. And the premise was nothing was going to change until gay people themselves stood up and fought for civil rights. It wasn't going to be handed to us. So that's when I knew we have to fight. And that helped me decide, yes, go forward with the lawsuit. Because at the time, my then boyfriend was horrified at the idea because he had introduced me to his family who lived in River Park. And he thought, oh, my God, if they found out you're gay, they're going to know I'm gay. And
then the whole domino effect.
Yeah,
You mentioned a lawsuit, and we're going to get to that in just a moment. In 1970, you helped form the Society for Homosexual Freedom, which in today's verbiage sounds antiquated, but
it was radical for the time.
Right.
Because it had homosexual in the title.
That was deliberate.
Yes. Because up till then, most organizations were very nondescriptive. Society for Individual Rights, Managing Society, One Incorporated.
So people could attend without everyone knowing what was going on.
We lost half the membership just when we decided to have homosexual in the name because that was really being upfront. And we wanted to be upfront.
And we should mention this club was on the Sac State campus.
Yes. Marty Rogers, who was a professor, was the person that came up with the idea because he'd been called in to UC Davis because the students there had organized, but they went by the name C, the letter C7, which was the temporary building they met at. They never picked the name other than that, just the number of the office building they met, because they wanted to stay hidden. And so administration called him in to meet with them to see if he could help them. And he went back to administration. No, they're fine. They're well-adjusted. They're just gay.
And we should mention, this is a time when gay bars did not have windows to the outside. Police could come knocking at the door at any time just for meeting.
Well, that whole period, you know, we were unapprehended felons to the police because it was illegal. Ministers said we were sinners, and mental health people said we were abnormal. And then most bars had blanked out windows and plain doors, not much signage. And I remember that one of the first bars to get windows where you could see in and out was a bar in San Francisco, 74, the Twin Peaks.
The Twin Peaks, right at the corner of
17th and, well, Castro and Market.
To this day, it's right there with the big windows. And put us in that era. You're openly gay on the Sac State campus. You're helping form this club that has homosexual in the name. Were you taunted, teased?
No. I first, when I came to campus, came under the Educational Opportunity Program. I was a Latino activist. And I was very fortunate. I had a mentor, a woman, Elena Caro. She had come back from Peace Corps from Colombia, and she decided to continue doing that kind of work. So she took me under her wing and gave me all kinds of training, you know. I never accepted the stereotypes of Mexicans. So I sure was not going to accept the stereotypes of LGBT community. When we started the club, it really helped build community because we had interdisciplinary courses like gay studies program. And it really, really gave me a good foundation because when I was lobbying at the Capitol, how you project yourself is really important.
So you wanted this club on campus to be sanctioned by the school so that right. It could have all the same rights as the other clubs on campus. What happened then?
I was on the Student Senate, chair of the Organizational Affairs Committee, which all new organizations have to go through. So I helped get it approved by the Student Senate, but it was only like a 7-4 vote. The student body president, Steve Whitmore, was very supportive. We had a lot of supportive faculty and stuff. So we felt comfortable because this really was a bubble, academic campus community. But the college president was the acting president, Otto Butz, and he wanted to be appointed permanent, but he didn't get it. So he didn't want to approve a gay club that would hurt his chances of getting it post later on.
He didn't want to rock the boat.
So we had to go to court. And that was the time of student rights. Just the year before, the student body had gone to court because the administration had forbid Tom Hayden from coming on campus. So we went to court. John Paulswell, who just graduated from law school the year before, became our attorney for a dollar. So we won on freedom of speech, freedom of association.
And that laid the groundwork for LGBT student groups on state college campuses throughout California today?
Throughout California and also some other states.
We're speaking with George Raya on his perspective on the equality movement from his front row seat over the past 5 decades. Did many people outside of the Sac State community know what was going on? Was it a front page sort of thing?
The Sacramento Bee did send a reporter, and it just happened that he was the editor of the Hornet the year before. So I went to him, I said, Nikki is really, really uptight. Don't mention me in the article. So he didn't. So everything was okay.
Nikki but being?
My then boyfriend.
Oh. Okay. George, you were the first person to have a full-time job in the California State Legislature lobbying for gay rights.
Right. Back in 69, Willie Brown, San Francisco, introduced what he called the anti-lynching bill. We were illegal, like I said. So he introduced a bill to decriminalize consenting adult sex. But it didn't go anywhere because at the time, Ronald Reagan was the governor, and he said, if you pass it, I will veto it. So 74, Jerry Brown comes in, and we met with him and had to twist his arm. I'll just put it that way. And he said, okay, I'll let it be known. I will sign it, but I'm not going to lobby it. And it was really fortunate that year we had 22 freshman members of the assembly. I had graduated from Sac State political science. And back then as now, Sac State is a feeder to the state capitol. So I had lots of friends that worked there. And one friend one day said, hey, if you want a job, come see me, a summer job. So he worked for Ways and Means, and he got me a job. So I had this whole network, and I knew how it all functioned. So it was like, okay, I'm from Sacramento. I know the capitol. I have friends and family that I can do it on the cheap because there was no money. After 6 years of not going anywhere, no one was willing to write a check. It was only after we started getting out of committee, out of the assembly, that people begin to have faith because it was rough.
It narrowly passed. It was a tied vote at first, right?
Well, it passed the assembly by a vote of 41. We had 44, but Willie said, look, if we don't need your vote, sit out because people were worried about re-election. But when it went to the Senate, George Moscone was the majority leader, and he was the partner with Willie in getting the bill passed. At the first vote, it was a tie vote, 20-20. So some newspapers went to print saying the bill was defeated because it didn't pass.
They did that in Long Beach?
The Long Beach Telegraph, you know, kind of like a Dewey beats Truman. But Moscone did was hold the Senate in chambers until Willie Brown, who was out of state, he was in Colorado, could fly back and break the tie. And anyone really could have changed their vote to abstain, but everybody kept their vote where it was. And so Willie came back, Lieutenant Governor votes aye. And so all hell broke loose in the gallery because we were all in the gallery. But it made the Stars and Stripes. A friend of mine sent me a clipping from the Jerusalem Post. It was news. We were the first state to actually change the law with the spot bill, rather than doing a total reform of the criminal code.
Other states had decriminalized it, but not in this manner.
Right. Illinois had done a total reform of their penal code. But California had been trying to do that for years, and we didn't want to wait for that. We wanted a straight up and down vote.
How significant was that for the gay community? How did it change everyday life?
Up until then, we were illegal. And Willie said you couldn't have any rights until you become legal. And besides that bill, we were pushing a non-discrimination in employment. And so I had to travel around the state to convince people in the districts to lobby their local legislator, because everybody was saying, oh, San Francisco was trying to push their morality on the state, because both of our sponsors were from San Francisco. You know, I really wanted Larry Kapelow from San Diego to carry the bill. So we had political action groups all over the state. I mean, I traveled by bus, plane, car, Santa Barbara, San Diego, L.A., Monterey, Ventura. It was insane. But we needed the support statewide.
And you got it.
We got it.
You mentioned George Moscone, former mayor of San Francisco, who was shot and killed by Dan White, along with Harvey Milk. Did you personally know Harvey Milk?
Yes. We were all active. He ran for office 4 times. I didn't support him the first 3 times. I supported him the last one in 77. When Harvey ran, you had Rick Stoats, who was a moderate LGBT, and Harvey, who was radical. So you really had landlords versus tenants. Uh-huh. It was more economic interests, class struggle kind of thing.
George, I want to take a quick break and then we'll come back.
Okay.
That's our conversation with LGBTQ civil rights pioneer George Raya. We have more on that discussion coming up after the break. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, Capital Public Radio. You're listening to a special edition of Insight on Capital Public Radio. I'm Randall White. We've been hearing from LGBTQ civil rights pioneer George Raya. He joined the effort to change the laws and culture of California in the early 1970s. We're going to pick up the rest of that conversation at the point where I asked him about his work with the Carter administration. In 1977, the National Gay Task Force became the first group of openly gay lobbyists invited to the White House to tackle policy issues that affected the LGBTQ community. George was invited to be part of that group.
The way that came about was Mitch Costanza, who was Carter's administrator for community engagement, was dating the co-chair of the National Gay Task Force, Gina Leary. And so Jeannie got Mitch to hold the meeting. So they rounded up people from around the country. I was the only one from San Francisco. They picked people from regions, Seattle, Los Angeles, Texas. And we came together, and each of us took a federal department. Mine was health and welfare. At that time, hepatitis was the big killer for LGBT community. And so I recommended that they do more research. Well, I got in trouble because I mentioned sex. And everybody else was just saying, oh, thank you for meeting with us. Such a great honor. Oh, God. Jeannie almost killed me right there at the
table.
Always
pushing the envelope, huh?
Yeah. But it was good because eventually they did fund a study, 78, 79, 80, which helped track AIDS and how it was spread. Although blood testing, they kept.
Wow. You're from Sacramento, but you mentioned San Francisco. You moved there for a while, then you came home.
Born and raised here, raised in Wheatland, which is a farm town north of here, came back, graduated from Sac High, and that's where I became an activist because one day I saw on the school bulletin board, if you're interested in helping develop a conference to encourage Mexican-Americans to go to college, meet here. And that's where I met Elena and helped put together this conference for students to come to campus. So I graduated 72, got admitted to Berkeley, was there for 2 years, and then moved to San Francisco. Because normally when people graduated here from Sac State, they automatically moved to the Bay Area just to be more free. And I remember one of my friends who graduated ahead of me came back one day about 1970 and was starting to talk about, wow, this great new community, Upper Market, and they got this bar, the Midnight Sun. And so that was the beginning of the Castro.
Of the Castro, yeah. And then what was it that brought you back to Sacramento?
Well, I stayed there from 74 to 90. And then one day I got a call from my sister saying, our father was sick, had cancer, come home, she needed help. So I came back, and that really saved my life because at the time, I was a volunteer. I worked with a thing called the Fairy Godfather's Fund. We were kind of like candy stripers. We would welcome each new patient, give them a robe, a teddy bear, toiletries, slippers.
These are AIDS patients.
And AIDS patients. And make their life as comfortable as possible because the nursing staff were just so busy they couldn't really give that all-important human touch.
And at this point, it really is hospice.
Oh, my God. Yeah. For client confidentiality, they just put the first name of the person in the room on the board. So when you went in and said, hello, Bob, sometimes you met someone who was the boyfriend of someone or someone you knew, and you still had to keep that smile. It was like being in a war. So many of my friends died. I stopped putting people in my address book in ink. I put them in pencil because my address book had so many crossed out names. It was every week, every day. And I just so lucky I survived.
So when you say moving to Sacramento saved your life, is that because you were removed from San Francisco's scene?
I was unfortunately beginning because of the depression.
The depression of dealing with friends dying on a regular basis.
And so I'm doing risky behavior. So coming back really kind of like got me out of that, came back and restarted my life here. Because I had thought about moving back to San Francisco, but then one day I just said, wait a minute, it's very expensive. I got a good network here. And it's an easier lifestyle. Because in San Francisco, being in politics, it's a blood sport. And I just was not that radical for a lot of the community.
Sacramento very much feels like home now?
Oh, it's always been home. Yeah. I live in Midtown. I love the trees. You know, you can walk around. Yeah.
So you've seen Lavender Heights change quite a bit over the years.
Yeah.
For better or for worse?
For better. And it was interesting. My first job out of high school was at a International House of Pancakes, which was across the street from where Faces is.
This is like 20th and K.
Yeah, because when I came out, all the bars were in West Sacramento. We had a sheriff, John Misterly, Big John, who didn't want any gay bars in Sacramento. So he forced them all to West Sac. That was a real problem. You had to go West Sac if you want to go out and meet people. So when he got defeated in 1970, I remember we had a party and we were actually dancing on one of his campaign signs. Things changed. One of the first bars opened like in 76, Bojangles. And then slowly the bars in 20th and K started happening and bookstores. The Lioness Bookstore, Open Book. So a community started building there.
We're speaking with LGBTQ pioneer George Raya about his career working on civil rights issues in California. Do you feel that there is a level of gentrification now that some of the younger LGBTQ community members can't afford Lavender Heights?
Well, not just here, but everywhere around the country. The Castro is very gentrified. But some of that's good because I don't think we ever should be ghettoized. And we need to mix in the general community. Because we found a long time ago, people change their attitude toward the LGBT community when they get to know someone who's LGBT. So it's important that we interact with the general community. There are problems because right behind FACES, there's going to be a six-story, 142-unit apartment building. And so Terry is worried about, oh my God, they're going to be getting down on me for the noise and stuff.
Well, George, what would you like the LGBT youth or young adults of today to know about the struggles you and others went through to get us to this point?
It was difficult. I was once in a police raid, and it's horrifying because you don't know if they're going to arrest you. So we lived with a lot of terror. When I first came out, it was more like a secret fraternity. You basically socialized in people's homes. I had some older friend that graduated a couple years before me. He and his best friend took a trip cross country. Both were gay. They never told the other one that whole trip. It was something you didn't even tell your best friend because it was so bad. Employment discrimination. 40% of the LGBT youth right now are homeless because a lot of times, because they're coming out early, as young as 11, their families can't handle it, so they kick them out. So it's still happening now. I mean, we have marriage equality, but we can't rest on the laurels. Mm-hmm. And we still don't have an employment rights bill federal. We have it on the state level.
If you could, George, is there anything you would tell the 1969 version of you as you're coming out?
Things get better. When I look at where we are now, because I went to a fundraiser for the California Equality, and I looked around, and that's a $7 million organization now. When I started in 74, literally, I lived partly on blood plasma donations because there is no money. I looked at a budget. I was getting, like, when we had money, $400 a month, $425 for expenses. Fortunately, I had people here that I could live with, but things do get better.
You've had so many firsts when it comes to this, to LGBTQ rights. Is there anything that you didn't do that you wished you had?
Basically got the people of color more active within leadership roles, because we're still working on that. And I'm really happy that the LGBT Center, Sacramento LGBT Center, recently started a bilingual outreach program and hiring staff that are bilingual. Because there are a lot of gay people from Latin American countries in Sacramento who are refugees.
So if you could, you would have encouraged LGBTQ people of color to get more involved politically.
Well, and also the organizations themselves do more outreach, and which some are doing. Yeah.
Although you're retired, I get the sense that you're not done yet.
No. Actually, I'm thinking of writing my memoirs. People have been pushing me to do that. I mean, I have so many stories.
I bet. George Raya, on his perspective on the equality movement from his front row seat over the past 5 decades, thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
That's George Raya, one of many Californians who dedicated his life to advancing the cause of LGBTQ civil rights. After the break, we'll hear Cap Radio's Capitol Bureau Chief Ben Adler speaking with three openly gay lawmakers about their time in the California legislature. We have more on our website, capradio.org/insight. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, Capital Public Radio.